And hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and we are very happy that you could be with us today. As a reminder, your feedback is always welcomed, which could be typed in the chat feature to everyone throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at approximately 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So let's begin roll call of our workgroup members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Let's start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, everyone.
Hans Wittenbeck.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning and happy Tuesday.
Ali Gunlapalli. Raj Gopharti.
Good morning.
Jim Jurgis. Ken Kamoto.
Good morning. I generally have a conflict with this time, but I will join whenever I can. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. Leslie Leonard. Hong Lu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Hello.
Clem McDonald. Aaron Meary is not able to join us today, but should be back next week. Mark Savage.
Good morning from Sunrise in California.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning from getting 18 inches of snow in Michigan.
And Abby Sears.
That's for you, Mark.
Is Abby Sears with us today? All right, and I know Ram Shram couldn't be with us today, but John Gorgullo is serving as his alternate. John?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning.
Great, hey, thank Jim you very George. Much. Thank you, Jim. All right, thank you, everyone. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their opening remarks.
Well, thank you all for joining us again this morning. Most appreciated. I think, Ken, you were not with us last time, I believe. Is that true?
Right.
You want to just introduce yourself briefly?
Sure. Ken Kamoto, CMIO at University of Utah.
Great. And Michelle, were you here with us last week? I couldn't recall.
I was.
You were. Okay. Sorry. My bad. All right. And I think we've still got one or two members who haven't made it yet. I think specifically Tom Cantalinas. We're looking forward to him being able to join us. So again, here is our agenda for today. At a number of people's requests, we're going to ask Al to sort of continue to reorient us to USCDI and where it fits in our ecosystem and rulemaking, et cetera. Then we're going to dive in to our work. And try to focus in on our charge 1A, looking at the new data classes and elements that have been proposed in draft V3. We'll do public comment 5 minutes before the end. Again, I want to welcome all the members of the public who are here. We have quite a number of public attendees today, which is wonderful. And I want to remind members of the public that we invite you to comment verbally at 5 minutes before the hour. We really do welcome your input in person, and you're also welcome to enter in the chat as well. And I see we got some chats here. Adi's here, and Jim, we heard you, so thank you. That's great. All right, Arian, do you want to add to that?
No, I think it's good that we're going to go over the USCDI process review, because I think that's caused a fair amount of confusion, and I think knowing where we are is going to help us better get to the meat of this workgroup meeting, which is related to charge 1A.
Stephen, this is Steve. May I add just one thing very quickly?
Sure.
Great. Just to differentiate, because we have two Steves or Stevens in the group, Stephen and I decided that it might be easier to refer to me as Ike, coming off of my last name, Eichner. So I will make every attempt to remember to identify myself as Steve Ike when I speak, but just in case, and to help us differentiate, please refer to Steve Eichner as Ike.
Thank you, Ike. Very generous of you. Hey, Stephen, why don't I lead us through the USCDI process review section? Just because I'm probably the most confused. I was probably baseline most confused by the USCDI process review. Al's prepared a ton of really useful content. I'm just going to give a high level perspective because I think there's been a couple of areas that have been the most confusing. Number one is there's a parallel ONC initiative called USCDI Plus, and we're working on USCDI V3. I think people have been trying to figure out where Plus sits and trying to get situated with Plus versus V3. And then I think there's been a fair amount of confusion about the role of certification V1 and the SFAP. And I'll give a very brief description of both, and then Al will give us the detailed deep dive. With regard to USCDI Plus, I think the short version of this is that USCDI Plus is the blog post in, that ONC published on this topic really outlines. The goal is for federal partners to help advance the future of USCDI by looking at areas of unmet need relating to, for example, public health or disability determination or quality measurement. But that initiative is a little too early for us to engage on, so we're going to focus on the V3 portion, and then with regard to the V1 and certification approach, you know, Al's going to walk us through the state of play here. I think the summary that I've come to is the goal, the policy goal, is to use the SFAP to advance standards. There's a little bit of gear teeth meshing with regard to the constraints that ONC has as a regulator to use the SFAP most effectively and have it mesh with the certification process. And we're right now in the middle of the process where, you know, the gears are trying to engage really smart legal minds who understand how the policy framework works for regulation is engaging to figure out how to best use the SFAP to engage with certification. The general thrust of where ONC is going is in line with the commentary of the HIT Policy Committee and Standards Committee and now the HIT Advisory Committee, which is, hey, let's be mindful that certification, while it sets a floor that we want to raise the nation to, may also anchor or pin the nation to the floor. Let's use mechanisms like standards of advancement to encourage organizations to go above the floor. And, you know, I think from a policy perspective, that is right on. And we're just now figuring out how to make that mesh with some of the regulatory arcana. But I'm going to turn it over to Al, who's got a nice pictorial, walks us through in much more detail than I just covered. The full state of play and landscape, and I think will help us get situated on V3. At the conclusion of Al's portion, we'll do a very short time for commentary because we really want to get back to the main material. But Al, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Arianne. Next slide, please. So we're going to talk, again, like Arianne said, we're going to go through just some overall thoughts on USCDI. And how it fits into the work that the task force, or I'm sorry, the work group is doing. So the first question is, you know, why is USCDI important? First of all, USCDI, especially version one, was adopted in the ONC Cures Act final rule, which was early 2020. It's designed to set this foundation, or the floor, as Arianne put it, for sharing electronic health information. And the areas of focus have been around patient care, the data needed for patient care, but also patients' access to their own data. It is USCDI is a required part of the new certification criteria, which is the CURES Act the CURES edition of the 2015 certification criteria. In particular, USCDI is invoked or used as the data standard or the data set that's required for API access, application programming interface access to data in a couple different criteria in the certification criteria, as well as it replaces the Common Clinical Dataset, which has been used since 2015 for a number of other certification criteria that are listed here. And what that means is that all of these standardized documents and standardized exchange mechanisms must be able to handle the data elements and data classes that are part of USCDI. And that's a change from previously those documents and those exchange standards required only the Common Clinical Dataset. So it's an expanded set of data that must be included or be able to be included in these exchange processes. Next slide. We keep going back to this slide. It's really important to focus on the fact that USCDI is really a core set. It's a core set that replaces the Common Clinical Dataset, and it supports patient care and patient access to the data. It's meant to be a reliable baseline on which other data requirements can be built. But when people refer to, just like they did with the Common Clinical Dataset, referring to USCDI is a known quantity for reference when the needs exceed what's incorporated into USCDI. And the other part to this, and this is where the HITAC and this work group is doing most of their work, is to inform the expansion process. It is part of this work group is part of the expansion process to make recommendations for adding to USCDI, not only version one, but also version two, which was published last year. Next slide. And I apologize for the busyness of this slide. There's a couple, this is how USCDI fits into other pieces of regulation. These are actually other parts of the CURES Act. And the next slide. The first piece of this is where does USCDI fit in? So USCDI became available in April of last year, so that systems could start updating to USCDI version one. And compared to previously, they were updating, they were already certified to the Common Clinical Dataset in the 2015 certification criteria. The other two things that happened in April of last year was that the information blocking provisions kicked in. And what the very short version of information blocking is that data could not be withheld following a valid request for information for patient data. And the amount that amount of information that could not be blocked without civil penalties is the amount of information that was contained within USCDI. And that amount of information that's subject to information blocking provisions is what we're calling, it is what's defined as electronic health information. And so currently that amount of information is defined as what's in USCDI. Next slide. There's two additional dates that are important, both of which happen later this year. Towards the end of this year in October, that amount of information that's subject to information blocking expands from just being what's in USCDI to all of the electronic health information that a system manages. And so it becomes much more extensive than just what's in USCDI. Next slide. The last date that I wanted to focus on is the end of this year, when the CURES Act criteria, all of the criteria that are part of the CURES Act certification, including the new API requirements, the requirement for using USCDI V1, all kick in. So everything has to be in place, and certification must be complete and made available to customers, to health IT customers, by the end of this year. Next slide. This is meant to convey what the timelines are and kind of where we are at in the process. We published, so we're at the beginning of 2022. We just published the draft US CDI version 3, and we're currently in the process, the period where both the HITACH and the general public has an opportunity to comment and provide feedback on what was included in draft V3. Last fall and last summer, lots of submissions came in, several hundred submissions came in that informed our decision about what should be included in draft US CDI V3. And now we are opening it up to the public to see, to get information back from them, as well as from the HITACH and this work group on what we got right, what people think ought to go in, possibly what ought to come out. And we're waiting for that input, and we're waiting for that input to be formed. That goes through the end of April. At the end of April, ONC is going to take all of the feedback from the HITACH, from the recommendations that this work group provides, all of the public feedback that is coming in now, and will continue to come in through the end of April. Then we will take all of that input into consideration and make whatever changes we need to make to draft V3 and publish the final version of US CDI version 3, hopefully in July of this year. Once we publish US CDI V3, the final, that is a standard that will be considered it's a new version of a standard, and there's many other standards that will be considered, but what that means is that ONC will consider whether or not US CDI version 3 will be made available for updates to Health IT. So an EHR could voluntarily update their system to either US CDI version 2 or US CDI version 3 in the future. The US CDI version 2 that we published in July of last year will be under consideration for SFAP starting in, hopefully, we anticipate that will be a standard that will be available for update to the systems. And so it's an annual cycle, and each new version of US CDI is under consideration for SFAP, which will then make it available for systems to be updated to. Next slide. So this is a little bit more information on the standards version advancement process. This allows certified Health IT to update to newer versions of a variety of different standards that are part of the certification, the standards that must be used in the certification program. And that is a certification program that's based on the Cures Act, the Cures edition of the 2015 certification. So last year we published the first approved standards list, and then systems are then able to update to several different areas, several different certification criteria using the newer versions of the standards. And like I said, US CDI is going to be one of those standards that will be under consideration for addition. US CDI version 2 will be considered for addition to this year's approved standards list. Next slide. Our intention was to have an annual cycle, but we realized that once US CDI version 2 comes out, which it did last summer, there are two key other standards that need to be updated to reflect the changes in US CDI version 2. One of them is the HL7 Fire US Core implementation guide, and the other one is the consolidated clinical data architecture implementation guide. Both of those are HL7 products. Both of them are implicated by our certification criteria, and with the new version of US CDI, changes to the US Core and the CCDA implementation guides have to be made to be able to carry the US CDI data elements and data classes during exchange or in pursuit of interoperability. And to give those implementation guides enough time to mature, to be validated and published, we extended that consideration period for SFAP through the end of May, by which time we expect updated versions of US Core and CCDA to be out so that all of them can be made available for voluntary update by systems starting in about August of this year. USCDI will be considered for SFAP along with these other two implementation guides. Next slide.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
I think Steve is first. Steve, you want to go first?
Why don't we let Al finish the presentation and then we will drain the questions at the end. Thanks.
Okay. And this is a super busy slide, but it's an HL7 slide that just reflects the there's a lag time between the publication of a version, the USCDI version, and the incorporation of that new version into the FireUS Core release. And so that's happening. That's happening now. I believe that we're in the balloting process, or about to enter the balloting process for the FireUS Core version that will incorporate USCDI version 2. So that's a little bit of a lag for these implementation guides. Next slide. We talked a little bit, or we'll talk a little bit about USCDI Plus. This goes back to some of the things that USCDI is and one of the things that USCDI isn't. So as a core set, a consistent baseline, because it's both of those, it's a core set and a baseline, there's other things that might be needed, whether it's by a federal agency or some other system that requires additional data that isn't in USCDI, either version 1 or even future versions. In response to that realization, ONC is establishing the USCDI Plus process. There's a buzz blog about it. We have a small web presence right now, more to come on explaining more about this. But ONC is working with several partners, several federal agencies, in order to, number one, define what those additional data needs are and how we can facilitate the dissemination of those additional data requirements, and how best to get those implemented as part of this USCDI Plus program. Next slide. Or is that it?
We're going to open up for a brief. Thank you, Al, for that really masterful presentation through some complex terrain. We're going to do a brief session to entertain questions. I, as somebody who is tempted to dive deep into the Arcana, and I see that we have a bunch of questions coming up. My request to the work group is, let's trust that although there is some meshing of gears with regard to the Administrative Procedures Act, that ONC is going to figure out how to use the standards advancement process as the primary mechanism for working with industry to update standards in production. Using certification primarily as the means to raise the floor for the EHR developers and other HIT developers who aren't so advanced to be working with the at the level of the SFAP. And number two is, as tempting as it is to jump into USCDI Plus and have concerns related to variability for USCDI Plus, let's all recognize that project's a little too early for us to engage in. And then finally, although we might want to give a bunch of opinion about how to use certification as a mechanism, again, if we're not experts in API and experts in certification, it's really out of our remit. So this is a time to just recognize the landscape and then engage in the process, which says, hey, just trusting that the SFAP is the mechanism that industry is going to be using to adopt new core, broadly accessible definitions of health information. Let's engage on V3. But with that, let's go through the five questions we've got, starting with Stephen. Go ahead.
Now we're up to six. Yeah, mine are mostly comments, actually more than questions, but I just wanted to get them in. One is to address a question that Grace raised, you know, out of band between the meetings, just to clarify for everyone that USCDI becomes irrelevant to information sharing requirements come October. It's not, we're not looking to USCDI V2, V3, any USCDI simply goes off the table as the October expansion to all EHI occurs. So I just wanted to make that clear, unless Al, you want to rephrase that in any way.
I would just say that that USCDI will still be a subset of the information covered in EHI. It will be, so it just expands beyond that. It beyond the scope. So we're looking at, additional data beyond USCDI. It doesn't mean that USCDI doesn't have to be exchanged right after that point. It just means that there's any amount beyond what's only in USCDI.
Yeah. Then my next comment was just for those who weren't with us, we spent a lot of time last year dealing with this issue of wanting to add to the USCDI items where the implementation guides were not fully mature. And we had a lot of back and forth with HL7 and ONC, and we got this agreement that HL7 would accept our recommendations, do the work to get the IGs ready in time for this SVAP process. So that delay in the SVAP, it was really something that this or our predecessor task force requested. So it's not like that slipped. It was modified to accommodate our request. And then the third comment question I would have is USCDI Plus. My understanding, Alan, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's really plus. It's on top of USCDI. Clem was raising some comments in the chat. You know, what if it goes in another direction or it uses different standards? It's really like USCDI is the core, and that USCDI plus will define additional items on top of that to meet specific use cases. Do I have that right?
Mostly. I just say that the particular data requirements of our federal agencies, of our federal agency partners, will include at least part of USCDI. May not be all of USCDI plus something else. It could be part of USCDI plus something else. I just wanted to make that clarification.
That's right. We could decide that actually, rather than creating a new implementation guide for public health, most of the data is already there in USCDI, and there's maybe just a little bit more that needs to be contemplated. But again, just from a scope perspective, we firmly recognize that work is just now kicking off, and we don't have much in the way of anything for us to dig our teeth or comment on, and we've got plenty of work to do for USCDI V3. Raj.
So my question, a couple of questions. One is the dependency with the US Fire Core, like, you know, so who defines first, like USCDI goes first and then tell the core that they need to follow that? Or is there, what is that agreement looks
I'll let Al comment, but my understanding is the mechanism that we're driving towards is one where we have additional data classes and elements considered in revisions to USCDI versions for the SVAP. Once they hit the SVAP, that's the time for, that's not the only mechanism that industry and HL7 and other SDOs have to engage, but that's the primary mechanism for industry and HL7 to engage and align on how to memorialize all of that in terms of updates to fire and consolidated CDA. That is a well-running process. Would have.
So, Arian.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to clarify something you said. I may have misheard you. The publication of a final version of USCDI, in this case USCDI version 2, that is the event that triggers the updates to US Core and CCDA IGs. Not, you mentioned SVAP, and it's not SVAP. We want SVAP to adopt the new versions of the US Core and the CCDA, which should already reflect USCDI version 2.
Thank you for that. So just again, as a reminder, the policy landscape that we want industry to be engaging in is one where we have due consideration of mission and national priorities and needs. We've got work like this consideration of USCDI v3 that gets up and engaged. Once we've firmed up what, for example, USCDI v3 looks like, we engage with SDOs and industry partners to figure out how to memorialize those data classes as actual interoperability specs, in particular, with particular focus on FHIR and consolidated CDA. And then we pilot test, or we should be in concert pilot testing, having that go through the usual cycles of DST, FDU, et cetera, prior to national adoption. But again, a mature standards-based framework has industry and business need and, you know, mission driving work on the ground, which leads to fully formed and validated standards that are informed by production use. And that's really the machinery that we're trying to get to. Ike.
Yes, thank you. At a very high level, Al, is there an expectation that USCDI Prime is going to potentially duplicate data fields or classes that are in USCDI, or is it expected to be completely different?
So just a quick clarification on terminology. USCDI Plus is the program or initiative that ONC established to build on USCDI. It's problematic to use that term of, I know that the term USCDI Prime has been used in the past, but just for clarity, it's best to reference USCDI and then this whatever is contained within USCDI Plus to meet additional specific use cases. So not gonna duplicate USCDI. USCDI Plus will not duplicate USCDI, but it'll just simply build on it.
Yeah, Al, the way that I conceptualize this, and at some point I think we just need to move on from USCDI Plus, is an ideal USCDI Plus outcome would be for example, SSA to look at the disability determination use case and decide, hey, if we just use USCDI v2, we can actually meet all of our disability determination adjudication, or we can meet 99% of our disability adjudication needs, but we need, you know, extra field Y. And the ideal consideration will be one where we are determining that 99% of the data that's necessary for public health or for disability determination or for CQMs is actually right there. And that the plus could either be considerations for USCDI v4 to expand the core, or in many cases will be profiles on top of the core for specific needs, just in the same way that we might consider in the future profiles on top of core to address needs in oncology or cardiology or, you know, name your specialty that aren't fully addressed by the core. Hans.
Thank you. I have three quick questions. One, just to indicate the question in the chat, and Stephen already alluded to that as well. And that's for the process as we go through where and how in these discussions do we or do we not, or how do we assert that standard beyond vocabulary are or are not ready, therefore need to be paid attention to for later on. We spent a good amount of time in the last round on that. Based on that experience, is there another better way to deal with that? So that's a process question, doesn't need to be addressed right now, but something to think about. Second question is a clarification, perhaps for Al. Is that with the shift that happened in the timing from USCDI v2 publication, then realizing that, oh, ASVAB needs to be adjusted because of underlying standards. Now we're sitting in the timeline of summer-ish, US CDI V2 ready already, the underlying standards being is that shift going to be in the same way so that UCDI V3, as we're thinking about it, would be in SFAP next year, summerish, or is it going to be shifted back to January-ish?
No, it's that we anticipate that the annual cycle shifts to the summer, on a summer cycle, because so to back up to the sort of the initiating event of the publication of a final version of USCDI, which then leads to a 6 to 9 month prep time for those respective implementation guides, which then have to be available for consideration for SFAP. So because of that, I don't want to call it a lag time because there's a lot of work to do. There's no lagging in updating those IGs. But so it's because of that. So yeah, it would be there's the publication of the version of USCDI followed by the updates to the IGs followed by SFAP of all three.
Okay, now that clarifies, that helps. And the last question is a challenge I think we're going to be looking at, if I heard Al correctly, that UCDI core, the basic one, could actually be subsetted in some context as well. I think this overall landscape of UCDI versus UCDI plus, whatever it's called, whenever it's going to be developed, is the stratification of the data to understand who is supposed to support what. The current state is that UCDI, and I'll use FireUS Core as the underlying standard assume CCDA, but you must support as certified software both fully. So as we are adding to the USCDI increasingly, the question is going to be, is that truly something that everybody must support? Or is this something that a smaller subset must support or should support? And I think as we go through, that question will become increasingly larger and increases the complexity that we're dealing with to make sure that the combination of USCDI plus UCDI plus data sets and the underlying configuration of IGs, that it works together. So on the one hand, I agree with Arian that yes, our focus is on CDI. Every time the question will start to have to be asked increasingly, is this really core for everybody? Or is it better done in a USCDI plus that we are currently not dealing with, but it needs to be addressed to ensure that not everybody needs to support everything.
Let me just try and answer your question for a second, Hans. And if I don't, we can follow up. I know we do need to move on, but so the USCDI is a requirement for certified IT, for certified EHR technology, number one, along with a lot of other certification criteria. There are some agencies that require the use of certified health IT with all of the attendant capabilities in the certification criteria. There are other federal agencies that may or may not require certified health IT, but they do require a certain amount of information to be provided to them. Using USCDI as the baseline, they can at least understand what they're going to get or they can get from certified EHRs if they say, we want the information from your system. So we know that that system is capable of doing everything that is in USCDI by the means that are outlined in those other certification criteria, the exchange criteria. So if they have additional, they can either shape their requirements around USCDI, or they can say, at least we know what we're going to get from certified technology. And so it's not about whether or not it's a subset of USCDI. It's just that federal agencies, as they consider requiring information, they can consider USCDI as a reliable, like I said, that reliable baseline.
That clarifies, because it sounded for a moment that we were going to carve inside USCDI, and that would effectively expand the number of USCDI inspectors.
We're not. We're just trying to identify what the federal agency data requirements are and how USCDI might meet those.
Okay.
Right. As I said, a successful conclusion of that would say, hey, there's really nothing to do because we're actually pretty well covered through USCDI. That would be a good thing.
And I think the correction is the harder one, is that should something be part of USCDI or is really a better candidate for a USCDI plus a data set, where do we draw the line? So I think, Aaron, you're still going to be in that balancing act,
That's right. Our job, again, just to sort of, the intent of this whole session was to place the work of this work group in context, in focus. Our job is to consider for evaluation candidates to enter that hallowed set of interoperability elements that are universal, that should be considered universal for the nation. Among the output of that set may be use of that universal exchange set for federal purposes, for providing clinical care, et cetera. But you know, we've got a really critical role to play in this work group by evaluating whether something that wants to enter that pretty significant set of things that we intend to have structured information exchange, that intend to go into FHIR core and consolidated CDA revisions, is appropriate for that consideration. Clem, and then we'll close out this chapter of this conversation and start engaging in the work. Go ahead, Clem.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions, comments. One of them, I think that thing, that October thing where we're supposed to get all data, as I recall the regulation, it said that data can be sent in any way the vendor wants, which to me says it's going to be pretty much unusable as a standard. Am I wrong?
Yeah, Clem, I think the you know, I made this comment as well. The intent of the US CDI is to form the floor for the information that we intend to exchange in a structured way. The intent of CURES is to enable information exchange for the complete record set. It is almost a consequence of that some portion of the CURES exchange that's above the floor of USCDI core is going to be PDFs. It's going to be notes. It's going to be other forms of unstructured information that does not have the same framework for computability that structured information has.
I think that's absolutely correct. Clarify a little bit. I mean, we've talked about this before, but the rule for that, the regulation for that part does say the vendors can send it any way they want. Am I wrong?
No, Clem, you're not. So, with a slight modification, we're not looking for a vendor to actively convert some of their electronic information into some other form. You know, in particular, whether it's paper or some other form, but if it's electronic, it must be available for sharing. That's the bottom line.
There's a feasibility. Yeah. So okay, well, again, well, this is what, not the what, time to okay. dig into this. This is not well, the time to dig into the information blocking well, exceptions. But
no, please let me explain what my question is.
Sure. Go ahead.
If we don't label those things with at least a date and a who, how is it going to be usable? That is, I think we may be hopeful about something is not going to be useful.
Yeah, it's not to say that the information is not usable just because it doesn't have a particularly defined standard. The data is, you know, represented however it's represented in each EHR, and then that information has to be exchanged on a valid request. So it's not an assumption that it's unusable, whether it be pre-text.
Okay, I misunderstood. So someone will request a particular page.
Yeah. Okay. So Clem, I would encourage you to look into the language, and it's pretty grotty, but I would encourage you to look in the language for information blocking relating to feasibility of requests. But the general mechanism is that requesters can request specific formats, and responders, to the extent that those format requests are feasible, should be able to respond in the requested format. Okay. So in general, if something is available.
I have one more question. And that's regarded to level the plus thing. So in my life experience, you know, everybody loves standards as long as their own. And no one wants to change. They all want to be free. You know, there's this conflict between standards and freedom. But so the plus gives an opportunity for groups to escape to freedom again, because they'll just declare, well, we're different. We don't have to use US CDI core. So the question is, do we have an opportunity to constrain that by maybe having to have to go back to US CDI Central before they can rush ahead and make their own thing the way they want to?
So there was a question about, so Avinash, who's our, if you don't know him, he's our executive director for the Office of Technology under which I serve. We actually have our information blocking team from our Office of Policy is planning on addressing the February high-tech meeting on info blocking. And I spoke to them yesterday, and they said that they would be happy to have a follow-on conversation with the work group answer questions till they drop on info blocking if the work group so chooses to have such a such meeting from them.
I just think we're going to have to think as work group leadership as to whether we're going to have time for that.
That's right.
But I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to limit debate at this point. We're going to declare cloture to use the Senate term. We're going to limit debate at this point, and then we're going to get back to the task at hand, which is now that we've appropriately situated ourselves in between the floor, which is defined by the SFAP and, you know, eventually some flavor of certification, and the ceiling, which is all the stuff that wants to be universal and all of the federal actors' desires for, you know, additions and modifications. We're going to stay firmly grounded in the work of today, which is what of the candidate set that wants to enter the universal exchange defined by USCDI, should we, in our wisdom, make recommendations to ONC about. So with that, I'm going to turn it over back to Stephen.
Thank you, Arianne, and thank you everyone for that lively discussion and for the chat. We appreciate the fact that members of the public are joining the chat here a little bit. So we are moving into our actual work here based on that clarification of where we stand. So let's go to the next slide. Again, just as a reminder, we have two charges. One is due in mid-April, one is due in mid-June. We are focusing initially on charge number one, to evaluate the draft USCDI version 3 and to provide recommendations. For this month, February, welcome to February, our hope is to focus on 1A, looking at the new data classes and elements that have been proposed within the draft version 3. And then once we have our way with that, we will focus in on 1B, which is looking at all of the other stuff that's in level 2 that was judged by ONC to be technically and, you know, societally ready for inclusion in a version of USCDI, but was not included in draft version 3. And I think last year we did a lot of sort of coloring outside the lines, which was a lot of fun and we learned a lot, but we are going to be laser focused on our charges. So as other good ideas come up, we will put them in a parking lot, but we are going to focus over my dead body on these tasks. And then once we finish 1A and 1B, we're going to move on to 2. And if we have more work that we want to do this year, we will do that. ONC has been very good about supporting us in doing additional things outside the lines, as it were. And we have historically brought additional commentary back to the high tech. So any questions about the charge, our timeline, or where we're headed? All right, Arianne and I are going to get you there, I promise you. On the next slide, we are going to now start in on our charge 1A. So go on one more. And again, just to be reiterative, here it is. We're going to look at the new classes and elements that have been proposed for inclusion in draft V3. And our focus will be to get any commentary about whether these were appropriate to include, whether there are some that should not have been included, whether there is more detail that is needed to clarify those that have been included, whether we have, whether there's room for improvement, as they say here, appropriate and meaningful data class and element names and definitions, did they get named right? And then representative examples of value sets. Now, and then the third question here is, are there significant barriers to development, implementation, or use of any of these? And this goes back to our earlier conversation. It may be that there's an implementation guide that's still in flight that we need to assure gets completed or updated or something before one of these can be included in V3. Let's see, I just forwarded a document that I put together that I think would be helpful. If we could pull that up, Mike, is that gonna work? What I did early this morning was I just went back to the website and I pulled up the picture, the graphic of all of the new data classes and elements that have been included in V3. It's the document, it's the Word document that I sent you.
Steven, we have the new data element slide from last week's slide deck. If you want.
Well, but what I did was I went a layer deeper in my document that I sent you, and I made a listing, and then I pulled out who proposed, who submitted. There we go. This is what I wanted. Yeah, so the graphic at the top, we've all seen this before. But then if you can sort of zoom in a little bit to the text at the bottom, hopefully we can figure out a way to share this through Google Docs or something. It's very straightforward. But basically, these are the new elements, and these are the people who submitted them. So I just wanted to point out the diversity. And I wanted to thank the people who did these submissions, some of whom are on this committee, some of whom are at CDC, et cetera, CMS, DaVinci, all of our friends in the interoperability space put a lot of thought into these submissions. And I think it's important to realize that we are responding to those individuals, as well as to the ONC staff that took the time to select these. So that was the point I was trying to make. If we can figure out how to distribute this, I also pulled in the links to each of the individual submissions, which I think would be helpful for us. So what we want to do is work this list to take the time to get people's feedbacks on these and perhaps to go one chunk at a time. But again, we have February to focus on this task 1A, and we want to get through it. But I wanted, you were all hopefully had a chance to do some thinking on this. We didn't get a lot of people coming back to us with homework submissions. Mark Savage actually did send us some commentary, and we'll invite Mark to speak to that here momentarily. But what I'd like to propose is that we take the time that we have, which isn't a lot, to at least start working this list and see how you all would like to provide your feedback. So Mark, would you like to jump in first?
Well, I was the things that I commented on were mostly just to indicate interest in helping out. I'll look at happy to help on the sex and gender questions and the functional disability status. I have contacts in both of those spaces and have done work there myself. I think it'd be useful perhaps to pick 1, 2, 3 priority use cases from HITACH recommendations and discuss what core data elements are missing from the US CDI yet are integral to those use cases. So I think that would be a more a concrete way to answer the question that is being posed to the group and to use a sort of a real world use case. Ones that occurred to me, shared care planning and patient generated health data, but others may have other ideas as well. Maybe that's all you need to hear from me now, Stephen, or did you want me to cover any of the other things that I said?
No, I think that's great, Mark, and thank you. And it's a good reminder that we have already, as a leadership team, planned to have some focus in our next few meetings. So our meeting next week, I believe, Al, we're going to have a focus on gender and biological sex at birth. Is that true? Are we getting the gender harmony group to come and speak to us next week?
Well, not those terms, but yeah, those are the topics.
Okay.
You're already conflating the variety of different terms that we're going to be using. So yeah, the two specific questions that ONC asks about sex assigned at birth and gender identity, value sets, definition, scope, and all that, that's going to be our primary topic. And we're going to have the lead or leads from the Gender Harmony Project present and field questions.
Thank you. Similarly, the following week, I believe February 15, we're hoping to have a focus on the address issues from Project USA.
That's on the books. And Carmen Smiley from our Office of Technology, she's the lead from ONC on Project USA, will be presenting and also answer questions.
And then similarly on February 22nd, we're hoping to have a session where we're going to focus in on disability and functional status, which I know there's a lot of interest in here. So just wanted to lay out that that roadmap for the month for those who hadn't heard that. So then let's return to the hands up. So Ike?
Yes, I just need to get the drill down on disability status. I've been working the issue behind the scenes, trying to recruit a few people. Identify a few folks that may be interested, including some people at the CDC and some of the disability rights organizations, to provide input on the 22nd, if not before.
That's great. And I think having, you know, subject matter experts, both those of you on the work group, as well as others from outside, will be good. We are going to have to manage the time, but I think having a few people come and speak to that to inform our discussion would be very helpful. Hung?
Yes. So I think looking at the data elements for the laboratory, my concern is that there are some missing data elements that would help interpret the test results that are not currently included, such as the instrument and the test kit. I think public perception is that if no matter where you go, your lab results will be the same. And that's not quite true. Certain tests, that's true. Like if you get a complete blood count, that's not likely to vary from institution to institution, lab to lab. However, for certain tests, such as like troponin, which is very important, it will change depending on the numerical value will change depending on where you got your testing. And so I think now as patients are more mobile and getting their care from multiple institutions and also having the capability having that interoperable in terms of having a longitudinal view of the entire history of the patient, having that information that includes instrument and test kit is essential, because otherwise there's going to be confusion about why values could be so different within a matter of days or something like that. And so I think that it might be too late for inclusion in this version, but I think in order for tests to be interoperable and understandable in the future, that those two pieces of information needs to be included.
Thank you, Hung. And I want to thank Al for posting in the chat the link to the page on the USCDI site where the level two laboratory data elements are listed. So there is a long list there. It includes test kit unique identifier. I don't see one that's actually called instrument, but it might be buried in one of those others. But there are, I think, nine roughly additional level two laboratory data elements. So as we move into this area, and we look at items, this is our task two, which is items that are leveled as level two that we believe should be included in version three, that's when that discussion should occur.
And I'd also sort of editorially comment that we are going to discuss SHIELD with regard to the ISA portion of our task force, which gives us another crack at, you know, effectively the same topic.
Did you have anything else to say, Arian?
I do. Okay. So this is sort of a grotty question on tribal affiliation and expanding race, ethnicity, code sets. So let me just give you a view of the current world as it stands, which is that the vocabulary set for race, ethnicity that is currently in USCDI V1 is any code from the CDC FinVADS code set, which is, if you look through it, incredibly detailed and expansive. And then unfortunately, it's capped at a minimum at the OMB code set or vocabulary set, which is quite restrictive. If you again look at that, the CDC code set, there is a large amount of specificity on tribal affiliation that's possible to express in the CDC code set. So I wonder whether the tribal affiliation a proposed addition here really is a subset of a broader conversation on how do we capture better and more detailed information on race and ethnicity and tribal affiliation within the context of, you know, a regulatory floor around the OMB code set. So, you know, the other examples might be, you know, I think we saw in the last year's wave of COVID some significant targeting of outbreaks associated with, for example, Hispanic people in the Bay Area, and a better code set that allowed us to more finely distinguish race, ethnicity, cultural affiliation, tribal affiliation would allow us to get faster at some of those areas. So this is sort of a placeholder for when we talk about this particular comment. I'd like to have a conversation about the OMB code set, the broader CDC code set, and meaningful subsets that are related to capture and where the tribal affiliation conversation for USCDI V3 sits with regard to that broader structuring. Thanks.
Thank you, Arian. I want to be clear again, our task, and we're going to be focusing in on this during the homework, is going to be to collect workgroup members' input regarding whether any of these is inappropriate and should be stricken from V3, as well as whether any of them need to be further clarified or modified before they are included in V3. So keep your comments focused in those two areas, remove or modify, and if so, how? And then what I think we're going to be doing, Al, just to be clear, is putting up a Google Doc that will give everybody the opportunity to submit their comments about remove or modify and how. And then it will invite you all to provide that input so that we can sort through it before next week and then go through it in a logical way.
That's right, Stephen. And just so part of that modify, change, drop or modify includes, is there a particular value set? So like would the recommendation for tribal affiliation be the CDC 900 plus race codes, or would it be some other set? HL7 weighs in on tribal affiliation and has a defined value set around that as well. Do we align with that? Do we align with CDC? Do we align with some other subset yet to be defined? Do we move to actually constrain it to a particular one? Do we develop and steward a value set around tribal affiliation? Those are some of the specific questions or maybe answers that we would be looking to get.
David.
A generic question on the value set axis. To what degree of value set specificity does the USCDI want us to achieve? Some of these, I was just looking at the generic document over the weekend, And it'll say things like the value set is, you know, LOINC 2.71, which of course is way too grand, way too huge. Or it might list, you know, half a dozen disability survey instruments, but it doesn't say which ones are included in USCDI and which ones aren't. It is the expectation that it gets concrete enough to be implemented in code if somebody wanted to?
It depends, David. So if there's, we generally are pretty restrict. We're pretty limited, not limited. We're pretty conservative about declaring what an appropriate value set would be. I mean, what we try to do is to constrain those recommendations on value sets to those where there's not unquestionable consensus on this is the right value set. Occasionally, we have value sets that are, you know, encoded in regulation, and so that's a kind of a it's kind of a done deal. It has to be this set. Sometimes it's a pretty clear delineation of what the best authoritative value set is. And sometimes it's up in the air, and sometimes there's differences between what one group uses as a value set and what other groups use as a value set. And so where there's widespread consensus, we typically will nail it down to a particular value set. But if there's another value set that we could use or should use, and an example from last year, where there was questions about what, you know, what's meant by a clinical test. ONC actually defined its part there within the draft V3 document. ONC actually wrote and stewards that value set to define at least a minimum set of terms that define the clinical test values, clinical test data element. So where there's solid value sets, that would be the recommendation we're looking for.
But I worry about the unintended consequence of, you know, ORs, where in an implementer has to implement all possible value sets, even though you haven't narrowed it down. So by being vague, you increase the burden on interoperability. And that's just too bad. We have to live with it, or could we try to narrow it down to a very specific value set when we can?
Sure. I mean, that has benefit for implementers to be able to say, well, at least what do we have to do? What do we have to do at a minimum, right? It doesn't mean that implementers can't have a more expansive value set or have the capability of capturing the entire universe of low-end codes or the entire universe of the CDC codes. It just means that because we have to test something. We have to test the abilities in systems to be able to do it. And by defining some sort of constrained value set, we can at least say, you know, we think that if you're doing the minimum value set, you're at least doing something to meet those that data standardization.
And let me clarify, David, I appreciate that you printed out and worked through the PDF document, but that doesn't have nearly the detail that we're going to want you to explore. You really, at this point, need to go to the website and dig into each of these. What you will see on the first page when you select a data element is any value set, applicable vocabulary standards that the ONC has included in their proposal. You can also then go to the submission itself, and the submission, which is in the words of the person who submitted it, has additional specification of applicable standards, et cetera. The ONC has added to those deeper pages their evaluation details and why they assessed it at the level that they did. But there is a little confusion, I think, still, whether all of the supporting artifacts, if you will, or additional specifications or applicable standards that were submitted by the submitter are also being embraced by ONC when they put it forward into a new version. And Al, I'd actually ask you to clarify that. Can we assume that all of the specification in the submission is included in the inclusion in V3 or not?
So the short answer is no. It's not a safe assumption. We evaluate the submission, including whatever the standards that were submitted But we also have to aggregate that into the sort of the more common good. And sometimes the value set associated with a particular use case may not serve enough of the community to be suitable for a US CDI data element. And so we may need to dial the lens back, zoom out a little bit and consider other things, whether it's other standards like Loinc and SNOMED instead of just SNOMED, or instead of one value set, which only is applicable to the FHIR function, FHIR-based function, to one that either includes a CCDA, the data required by CCDA, or just say there's a difference. So we're not going to say we're going to let other people sort it out. So no, it's not always according to the submission.
Al, this is Ike. Just to interject really quickly. You raised a very good point, which was my question was looking at who are the consumers of the US CDI from a data element perspective or a data class perspective.
Who are they? It's everybody who uses an EHR. Doctors, other providers, patients, consultants, sometimes payers, depending, those are all the consumers of the data that's within USCDI and actually within the entire EHR system that's beyond USCDI.
All right. I'd like to get through the last two raised hands before public comment. So Clem, you're up.
Well, I've got two things. One of them, in terms of the lab stuff, what's not been included is the interpretation code or the abnormal flag, which I think every physician looks at when they scan the reports to figure out which ones they got a concentrate on in it. You know, it's way more important than really great deals about the specific instrument kit, because most patients and users won't know what that is. I mean, I'm not against the other one, but we ought to get that one on. And then the second thing in regard to an answer to David, David's always got good questions and issues, but I'm not sure it's easier if you narrow it down. Personally, you know, I think we really should get a single code for every survey, because we could aggregate it better. But, you know, there's competition out there, and I don't think that's going to happen in our, you know, the next 10 years. Plus, if you say, here, pick what you have from this list, it's easier maybe than saying, do this. So it's just a different perspective. But I'm glad the way USCDI is going, because previously we had, for example, no way to send specific tests or labs. Now we at least got some.
So Clem, you want to have your cake and eat it too. Before you were arguing we had too much diversity and that would impede interoperability, and now you're saying we should foster diversity because that...
No. I didn't say foster. I'm recognizing we need to get people doing something so we get it done. And now in some of the stuff you've asked is very hard. You know, there's probably 4,000 functional status instruments, you know, and so... I think we should work toward that, though. I'm for you.
And at some point, if US Core is going to include the ability to pass this data through the API, at some point when V3 becomes part of the certification requirements, it's going to have to be specified in terms of specific value sets. I mean, it just has to be.
So to that point, David and Hans, thank you for the private comment on this. One of the things we did last year as we worked through this process was we actually asked members of the task force to specify which of these data elements is already instantiated in CCDA and or US Core. And Ricky Bloomfield, who's not with us this year, did a lot of work on that, as did Hans and I believe others. But we will try to do that again as we put together and evolve the docs that we will be presenting to you all to clarify which of these, you know, is already ready to go or needs more work done in US Core and or CCDA, because as we've said, that may be part of the process where we look back to HL7 and ask them to finish up implementation guides in time for the next SVAP version. Okay, Mark, you're up.
Thanks. And in light of Arian's comments about race and ethnicity, I wanted to quickly summarize a question that the Gravity Project is working on. which may be relevant to whether some of these V3 elements need some modification. We are looking at race and ethnicity and the and whether we need to add to the value the source of the value and the method of collecting the value. There's a federal preference for self-reporting. When we've talked to people, we found that sometimes those values get changed around. There's no indication if it's self-reported or not. Batch files can change them within the record. So we are exploring that with race and ethnicity, but we are also asking the broader question at the Gravity Project, whether there are other data elements that might be important to do with as well, such as sexual orientation, gender identity. The ones in V3 that might be relevant to that are some of the functional status, disability status, mental function, and the health status element. So let me leave that as a summary since we are headed for public comment, but just wanted to flag that in light of the comments about race and ethnicity. Thank you.
Well, you make a really important point, Mark, that you know our charge, again, just as a reminder, is to look at the items that have been included in draft V3 and then look at other items from level 2 that we might recommend be included in draft V3. We have not been charged with going back or going beyond that to look at items that have already been included in USCDI and suggest adjustments to them, or items that are leveled at level 1 or comment and talking about those. We did some of that work last year, and I think it led us to some very interesting areas, but in terms of what we've been asked to do by and for the HITAC, it's very focused. But it's a good reminder, Mark, that public, members of the public, including all of us, can go in and provide additional comment on items that are either already included in USCDI or are, you know, on the path towards future and potential future inclusion. And we can add that level of specificity or suggest changes to items that are already there. And those would also be considered by ONC, I believe, when they go to finalize version 3 and to prepare for version 4. Do I have that right, Al? Or did I lose you?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Stephen, I missed your question. Apologize.
That's fine. No, the question is for, like Mark was talking about, potential suggestions from Gravity for some of the demographic elements that are already included in version 2, sort of suggestions to upgrade or modify things that already exist. That's not the work of this work group, but it is something that any of our members could do as members of the public and submit those comments through the website, correct?
Sure, absolutely. Anybody, anytime can make comments about any of the previous data elements, and the extent to which we can respond, maybe accept those recommendations depends on, is based on kind of where that particular data element started. Some things that we can change, some things we may not be able to change.
Stephen, my point also was that may be a relevant question for some of the V3 proposals under health status as well, and I'll take a look at that, and others may have some thoughts about that as well. Thank you.
Perfect. And again, I don't know if I could call on you, Grace. Last year, we considered some data elements that I submitted, and I ended up sort of championing them myself. You've submitted one this year. Did you want to make any comment on the submission process or experience that you went through to get it to this point?
Mm-hmm. So it was a learning curve for me as someone new to the process, but Al was really wonderful and helpful, and the task force was very helpful in guiding me through it. Going on through OnDeck, so really taking a deeper dive into the USCDI website, looking and understanding what's at all of the different levels, level 2, level 1, comment, reading through the comments, absorbing what's been in the meetings, and then going through the OnDeck website, which also has a guide posted to help step by step walk the submitter through the process, submitting as much info as possible, and also the ability to flag if you do need more support and try to connect with someone that may be able to help. For example, I raised the fact that maybe a new person joining the group or wanting to submit may not know all of the different standards there, but to call that out in your submission, and maybe someone can follow up to kind of patch that in, or at least to raise that flag. Because I know as a newcomer, I had challenges in navigating OnDeck, and I didn't want to leave things blank, but I also didn't know where to look for the info. So I think it's come to a great place, and I'm pleased to see a lot of new submissions that will be really helpful to patients and their families included in here.
That's wonderful. And Michelle Shriver, if I could call you out, also a number of these were submitted by folks at CMS, not by you individually, but can you say anything about the process that led CMS to make these proposals?
So thanks. We actually have an internal process to CMS to gather feedback from our stakeholders within the agency. But we also have an outreach where we talk among the federal partners, such as CDC, VA, and others, to see which are the areas that are most promoted. And we will be doing the same thing this year.
And Adi, same question to you regarding the CDC process. Obviously, CDC has brought a number of these items forward. Can you comment on the process of getting them here?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. So we had an internal process where all our centers, as you know, we have 13 centers within Centers for Disease Control, were coordinated by my office and our sort of supervisory office to look at these elements and then harmonize them, and then had a group of individuals go through these and try to help prioritize them. Obviously, everybody would have wanted everything to be prioritized, but we knew. And there were commonalities, so we were able to pick up those. And then these are specifically for public health and those kinds of stuff. So thank you. Is that sufficient? Or
That's great. Detail. I was just trying to provide the background so people understand, you know, all the work that goes into bringing these forward. It's pretty tremendous. Okay, I think this is a good time for us to transition to public comment. And again, I would strongly encourage any of you members of the public who are out there to raise your hand and be heard.
All right, thanks, Stephen. If we could pull up the public comment slide, please. We are going to open up our meeting for public comments. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand. And when it's called upon, press star 6 to mute or and unmute your line. Let's take a look and see if anyone has raised their hands. I don't see any raised hands, but we'll monitor that over the next few minutes. In the meantime, I'll turn it back to Stephen and Arian.
Wonderful. Arian, do you have any remarks you want to share as part of our closing?
No, I'm just glad that we appropriately situated the work group's work. And as you can see from the discussion, there's a lot of work to do. So we will dig into the juicy meat of USCDI in the weeks upcoming.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, we are going to have guests next week to talk about some of these items in particular from the Gender Harmony Project. That doesn't mean that we are going to be limited to that. We're going to try to keep that discussion contained within probably a half an hour of our 90 minutes together. And so what we are going to strongly encourage you all to do is access the Google Doc that we're hoping will get posted in the next day or so, which will give you the opportunity to focus on, as Al put it, drop or modify. If there are any of these items that anybody feels should not be included in V3, this is a great time to say that and why, and modifications. And again, we encourage you to drill all the way in to each of these items, look at the submission, look at what was suggested by the submitter, as well as what was at, the evaluation that was made by the ONC team, which again is new. We have that this year. We asked for it and we got it, as well as looking at that, the sort of the front page for each item to see which value sets ONC actually specified. Because I think, as Al clarified, a lot may have been suggested by the submitter, but it's really at that front page for the individual data element that we see what ONC has specified for it. Al, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, thanks, Stephen. I think you covered it. I think you covered it all.
Perfect. Grace?
I just wanted to add, I thought it was very interesting to hear that even the CDC and CMS have internal processes and groups to gather comments and feedback. And that's a very structured, well-supported format, and that patients and care partners and general consumers may not have that level of support. So I want to encourage the that we have our contact information available. I'm not sure if there's ways to publicly post the emails of the workbook or you know, even there's an email here to make that more forward-facing. So if people do need support with submissions, they know exactly where to reach out to.
Yeah, Al, you know, I think Grace is reflecting a lot of the feedback that we provided last year to ONC about how to make the process more accessible, more supported, especially for those who are not, you know, doing this for a living. At some point, it might be nice to hear back from you, you know, what are the changes that have been made, that are being planned for the submission and review process. I'm not saying we need to do that right away, but because there was a lot of feedback given on that last year.
I'm sure. It sounds like we can do probably a good spot for that would be to just before time, like right before we, right before or right after we issue USCDI V3, which sort of kicks off the V4 submission high season.
That sounds great. Any other comments that we brought in from the public? Nope. Okay.
I don't see any comments.
Thank you, Mike. And anything else from work group members? Well, we'll end a few seconds early. Again, I want to thank all of you for your time and attention today. Great discussion, and really look forward to your doing your homework and us being able to leverage that input when we meet in another week.
Thanks all.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.